Hello, and welcome to Harp Column Podcast, taking you behind the stories in Harp Column from a practical harpist's perspective. My name is Christina Finch, and I will be your guide to all things harp. Today's episode is brought to you by Harp Column Music at harpcolummusic.com, where you can download PDFs of some of the best new arrangements and compositions for solo, ensemble, and chamber harp. Whether you play pedal or lever harp, it's always a joy to find beautiful and playable music. If you've been listening to our podcast all along, you'll remember our guest for episode 8, Rhett Barnwell. We are pleased to announce that Rhett has joined with Harp Column to make his music available in PDF form at an incredibly reasonable price. If you purchase the Serenade for the Soul collection for only $17.95, you get some of Rhett's most beautiful and popular arrangements and compositions, including Angel's Hymn, Be Still My Soul, and an arrangement of Ave Maria for harp and high voice. Episode 14 is a little different in that the author of the featured article is me. I had the honor of contributing a piece of writing based around engaging in more inclusive practices in our community. Specifically, my interests are around working with people with special needs, a community that is as vibrant as it is diverse, and one that is sadly often overlooked when it comes to the arts, and especially in music. So, this episode, instead of talking to harpists, I decided we should talk to some real experts. First, we'll speak with Stephanie Janikopoulos, an inclusion teacher and specialist in the Chicago public school system. So, you work as an inclusion specialist. What exactly does that mean?
With my position, I work with the general education teachers and other specialists at my school, including occupational therapists, speech and language pathologists, physical therapists, social workers, collaborating and coming up with individualized plans for my students. And we call them IEPs.
A small aside here for context. In 1999, a piece of legislation called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act was passed into law. The purpose of this law is to ensure that any student with a disability is provided with a free public education that is tailored to their individual needs. One of the most powerful tools created by this law is the Individualized Education Plan, or IEP. This tool is a legally binding document that is meant to address each child's unique learning issue and include specific education goals. As it is a legal document, the IEP is also protected personal information. Now, back to Stephanie.
After the plan has been created, I work with the teachers and with my students to include them into the general education population so they can compete along their same age peers.
On the IEP, they're massive documents. Can you give a suggestion if a parent gives access to the teacher? What would be things that that teacher should be looking for in that IEP specifically?
There are places in the IEP where you can include modifications and accommodations per the subject matter. So where I can suggest the artist teacher goes is to the accommodation and modification section of the IEP.
You have a lot of training, of course, so do you have any suggestions for someone who wants to become more inclusive in their practices that doesn't necessarily have a lot of training?
I think the first thing is don't get down on yourself if you do react with a person with a disability or you get frustrated. It's natural. You're human. You're not a bad person. It's okay for the educators to talk to the child about their disability. And of course, that depends on the age. If you're with the little ones, I strongly recommend giving the parent a survey and saying, you know, are there any things that I should know about your child? Please tell me the disability. Please even give me your general ed teacher's phone number. Because if you're working with a child with autism who had a day that was thrown off, he's going to probably bring that into the lesson. And if there's that communication, I think that can kind of help everyone.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about is the importance of proper terminology when you're considering more inclusive practices.
Over the last 10 years, person-first language has been significantly important in the advocacy of people with special needs, meaning instead of an autistic child, it's a child with autism. It's remembering that we are human first. And I think you have to remember we can't let their disability kind of make us lean back. It's not about making the expectations lower. It's about changing the expectations and coming at it from a different perspective. Working with students with disabilities has allowed me to just see different perspectives and understand how the brain works so differently for different people that everything is interpreted, can be interpreted differently. I think some of the students I have with disabilities have a different level of brilliance. They interpret some things so differently than sort of the norm may interpret, which is very inspiring, especially creatively.
You're listening to Harp Column Podcast, Episode 14. You can read more harp news, feature stories, and subscribe to the print magazine at www.harpcolumn.com. Now that we've learned a little bit about navigating an IEP and talked about treating people like people, let's transition over to my second guest, board-certified music therapist Jessica Bogasic. Jessica lives in Columbus, Ohio, and works on the home-based palliative and hospice care team for the Nationwide Children's Hospital. Can you tell me a little bit about your work history?
I worked in a school district in Michigan in the past in a special education program. I'll give a shout out to Angie Snell. She's been there for probably 30 years plus, and she's amazing. Laurel Rosen-Weatherford is the other music therapist there, and she's also amazing. She's been there for a long time. In Michigan, the children and young adults in special ed are serviced from age 3 to 22. And so I worked with kids from that whole spectrum of ages, either in self-contained classrooms, so classrooms only with kids with special needs, or in inclusive classrooms, which means there's maybe one or two children who have special needs in a class with a general education population. And then I've also worked one-on-one with kids in their homes. More recently, I would go to their homes to work with kids with autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, lots of other conditions, just to kind of help them on a more one-on-one basis. And now my work is more with kids and their families all together, helping everybody have a really good quality of life using music. So these kids are on palliative care or hospice care. And so they're kids with life-limiting or chronic illnesses or possibly even terminal illnesses, things like congenital defects or chromosomal abnormalities that they were born with, or even cancers. I go to their homes and we use music to create experiences for them and help them live full lives as much as possible and create memories and positive experiences with their families.
So I thought we'd talk a little bit about music's effect on the human brain. Can you tell me a little bit about how that works?
The effect of music is so broad, it's hard to just talk about it in terms of how it affects the brain. I mean, I could go on for like hours about how much effect music has on humans as a whole. Music is a whole brain process. And we know from research that music uses both sides of the brain, the left side and the right side, at the same time. So music has this special capacity to strengthen and create neural connections in the brain that can help strengthen processes that might be not as strong for somebody who has a certain condition, or to strengthen skills that just need a little bit of extra help. Those might be language skills or motor skills, or organizing sensory experiences for people who have trouble kind of taking in sensory experiences and making them work in their brain so that they can perceive the world in a functional way, helping with focus and attention and decreasing anxiety. Those are some of the connections that music has the capacity to make in the brain. Beyond that, there's also research out there that shows the strong emotional connection that music can have. And music is capable of creating really strong memories because of that, because of those emotional connections. We've all had that experience of hearing a song that just takes us right back to a moment in our past because of that emotional connection, that emotional tie that music can have to memory. We've probably all had that experience also of using music to help memorize things, facts, you know, the state's song or the Constitution, or I've heard of people having kids put their times tables to music to help remember their times table. It's a functional way to use music to help people cognitively. So, you know, if you're a kid that just can't focus and can't remember things, but you have a test on Friday, you know, putting something to music might help strengthen that memory in your brain because of the neural connections that music can activate in our brains. And as music professionals, we have the responsibility and also the joy of getting to share our expertise with other people who might not know how to set something to music, helping bring music to other people because it can be a functional tool. That's what music therapy is all about, using music as a tool to help people. For kids with disabilities, I think music has this great capacity to help them develop a sense of self-confidence and of accomplishment in being able to do something that maybe nobody ever expected that they could do.
If someone is interested in incorporating more inclusive practices into their teaching studio, do you have any resources that you would suggest to them?
I have this really great book. Any music professional that wants to learn more about music in special education or learn a little bit about how they could adapt their practice to people who have special needs. It's a book called Music in Special Education. It's written by two doctoral level music therapists, Mary Ademek and Alice Ann Darrow. It talks a lot about the history of special education and inclusion. It also touches specifically on different disabilities and how to adapt music experiences for those disabilities and how to reach those individuals with your medium, which is music. And then every state has a state organization for music therapy. So if you live in Alabama, for example, you can Google the Alabama Music Therapy Association and find music therapists who live right in your state or in your area. And my experience is that most music therapists love to talk about what they do, and reaching out to them would be a really great option if you needed some suggestions or some resources or maybe a music therapist to come watch what you do and give you some pointers or something like that. You know, they're all awesome people.
That's it for our 14th episode. Many thanks to Stephanie Janikopoulos and Jessica Bogasek. Thank you all for indulging my need to learn more about this topic. The stunning music for today's episode comes from Claire Jones's new CD, Royal Harp Strings, reviewed by Allison Young in the current issue of Harp Column. A blog with extra information and links to some of the books, programs, and people mentioned in this episode will be up on the Harp Column website. To learn more about Harp Column, please visit www.harpcolumn.com and subscribe today to gain access to current and past issues, as well as a lot of great web content. My name is Dr. Christina Finch, and we at Harp Column hope that you have a spectacular week.